A warning to listeners or readers. The following content may at times include details about abuse, rape, suicide, domestic violence, and other types of trauma that may be emotionally confronting or triggering.
Welcome to Raised by an Invisible Village, where we unbundle the incredible power of the people who influence our lives. I'm Kathy Houlihan, your host, who will be guiding you on a very personal transformative journey. My personal story of uncovering the diverse characters that made up my invisible village, who together enabled acceptance, growth, and success. Aunty Norma and Uncle Dan were two very critical characters in my invisible village. They entered into my village at a time that they could have quite easily not accepted me into their home, but they did. If you are listening to Raised by an Invisible Village for the very first time, then I sincerely encourage you to listen to previous episodes before this one, providing the context of what you are about to dive into. Welcome to an emotionally charged episode that delves deep into a raw and candid conversation I had with Aunty Norma and Uncle Dan at their dining table. This conversation takes us back over 38 years to a series of events that had a profound impact on all of our lives. The journey leading up to this moment was not an easy one. After over three decades of no communication, we were reunited only a few years ago at my father's funeral. Both Aunty Norma and Uncle Dan approached this reunion with apprehension, unsure of who I had become and the life I had lived since leaving them as a 13-year-old. Since that funeral, we have built our relationship, forging an unbreakable bond that I cherish deeply. Join us in this episode as we recount the harrowing experiences of that courtroom drama, its far-reaching consequences, and the heart-wrenching decision made by my aunt and uncle to send me back to my parents.
I just want to say thank you very much for having the opportunity to have a conversation. It is actually a really emotional part of my life, and I know it was a really emotional part of both of your lives, but also for Kath and Robert. But for me, this was such a for that period of my life, actually was a platform that helped towards a lot of my recovery for a very traumatic period of my life. So, you know, our journey going around Australia is to say thank you to all of those amazing people that were part of my invisible village. And, of course, my father's death allowed us the opportunity for us to reconnect after 35 years, I think, or maybe even for nearly 40 years. So, 38 years. Yeah.
Which is wonderful because it means that we can talk openly without any emotional
bits. Baggage. Yeah, yeah. And there's definitely just, from my perspective, definitely a lot of gratefulness for what you guys did for me in that period of life.
2019 passed on.
What's that?
2019. So it's 33 years.
Yeah, 33 years. So when was the first time you met me?
We got off the plane.
Yep.
Yep.
Fire away, Uncle Dan.
Question one. Can you remember when we first met? Where, how, why, or what? Yeah, Tullamarine, Melbourne Airport. Question two, how did I come to be living with you and what were you briefed on? Well, not much at all. 1986, I had received a phone call from your father, Paddy Murphy, who was my twin brother, who stated that to his belief that he and his wife Louise had a very troubled daughter, Kathy, who was the oldest of their children. He explained that Kathy was rejecting their Jehovah's Witness religion and was mixing with the wrong type of people and had been very seriously sexually assaulted. Your father Paddy asked me if we would consider raising Kathy to get her away from Alice Springs. After talking it over with Norma, my wife, it was decided that we would take Kathy in for a few weeks holiday so as to get to know her. A short time later, we were notified that Kathy would be arriving at the Melbourne airport on a certain date and time. and that she was to be in our care indefinitely. Being very practical types, we figured that we would probably play it by ear, as we had a spare room, as our son Robert, through work, had moved out of home, and that we realised that Kathy had issues with her parents, all through religion. In that, she didn't want to be part of their religion, so we settled in as carers. Norma had more import with Kathy, as I was full-time shift work and had enrolled her in the Langwarrin School and various other activities.
So how did you feel like a rant? Like, you hadn't spoken to my father for, what, 30-odd or whatever, years. A lot of years? Mm. So how did it feel when you got that phone call?
I was shocked. Like, we were in shock, weren't
not
we?
Not so much shock. I just sort of...
I was. I couldn't believe.
I thought, well, I know what religions can do to people.
Mm.
You hear it all the time, cults. And I figured Jehovah's Witness might have been a sort of offshoot of a cult.
Yeah.
Where the kids were forced to follow on and do as their parents decided, whether they liked it or not. And I could see a conflict that had arisen between us, and you were heading down a bad path.
Mm.
So we thought, well, we could do what we do, or could do, and that's probably how it all came about.
That's amazing.
I couldn't believe that parents could talk about their 12-year-old daughter like that. I just couldn't believe it. They were sending you down to strangers that you didn't know. Mm. We didn't know you. We just didn't know how it was going to play out.
Probably didn't even know you existed.
I knew
Patty had a daughter named Kathy, but that's all I knew.
So to get that phone call and then all of a sudden I'm on a plane. Like, what was the time frame from when?
It was only probably about a week or so.
Wasn't that long.
They didn't, the social welfare or police didn't enlighten us on how to approach you, all I could do was treat you the same as we treated our own children. There was no preparation. So it was feet first, in we go.
So that phone call from my father to you, there was an indication that there had been a sexual assault. So there was you kind of got a phone call, here's my daughter that's been, mixing with the wrong
kids. He told me that it was an alleged rape.
Yeah.
And that's what stuck in my claw. This is your daughter you're talking about. It just blindsided me. So when you came, you poor kid, you get off that plane not knowing what we're like.
Yeah.
And, of course, me being emotional, grab you to give you a cuddle. But you were fine. But you probably thought, where am I?
I don't remember the trip at all. That's obviously because a lot of things had been going on. But to get off the plane and then come into strangers then feel connected at the same time. Like, I remember that feeling.
Yes, it was good.
Yeah, and I talk about that in one of the episodes, that I instantly felt safe and I instantly felt accepted and I instantly felt loved.
Yeah, that was good. Yeah. That was good.
Even though I don't remember the circumstances, but still that's pretty much, like, if I put myself in your shoes at that time and I got a phone call from one of my siblings who I hadn't spoken to which is a reality, I haven't spoken to my siblings for many, many, many years, and then all of a sudden asking them to look after their child, it's pretty monumental.
Well,
pretty monumental. So,
just lucky that we could fit you in.
Yeah. Really.
And
put
you in school and other activities. Like, what was it, telephone bowl, roller skating.
Oh, did I?
Roller skating everywhere.
Yeah. Oh, did I? Really? See, there's roller so many skating, things that I've just forgotten about.
And the horse Kathy gave you.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. That was kind of
around the paddock.
The first couple of weeks she gave me.
Yeah,
gave me the horse and taught me how to feed him and ride him. And, yeah, that was amazing. That was pretty amazing. So some of my vague memories were getting off the plane. I remember being cold.
Yes, you were freezing.
It was sort of in still February, though, right?
It was.
Around February?
Yeah. Dad died in February.
Yeah, definitely around February. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
So I was very emotional.
Oh, you would have been.
Mm.
I remember the warmth of your home, and I write in the episode that I remember that it was dark when you picked me up from the airport.
Yes, it was. Awesome.
And it seemed a long way to your house.
Yeah, it was. Probably 40 k's.
Yeah.
And I remember, an hour and a half.
I remember waking up and then realising that we were on acreage.
Mm.
Well, your house was on acreage and there were horses and a big horse arena and, yeah, being, wow, this is
different
amazing.
World.
Different, completely different world, different world from what I'd grown up in. And then did I start school?
Almost
straight away.
Almost straight away because I thought it was important that you start in a normal life. Yeah, so I went down and saw the headmistress and just sketched the outside of what was going on and how you needed protection and didn't want all the other teachers to know your story, but just to be aware of being in an emotional situation.
So what was my demeanour like?
Quiet.
You're quiet, you're offish a bit, but then you relax more as the weeks went by. You relax more. I think Cassie giving you the horse, which was a big thing for her to do, made you feel I'm part of this family.
Yeah, most definitely.
Yeah, so, no, you were good.
Yeah, I was good.
I put rules down. And,
and you had to pick up the horse manure. And
Yeah,
little chores to do. So.
But even that, when you think about it, so you're both your own children had left home, and so here you are taking another child after years of not being involved in school.
We still had Kathy, but she was working.
I actually don't remember Kath being at home for a while. I think she
was at home.
Was she? Maybe she was never.
She was at home until you left. But she was
busy.
But you got on well with all right now. I hear that you got bullied at school, but
yeah
I thought you got on well at school.
Yeah. Yeah, my memories of school, I mean, I wasn't there for very long either.
No.
But I remember the early days. But I was also a girl that had come from a very almost remote community in Katherine to a
busy school.
A city school in my eyes. Mm. And we never had to kind of wear the type of school uniform that Lang Warren's school uniform was.
Yeah.
And, I do remember the early days and being called, I don't know why, but I was called a lesbian for some reason. But I was telling you the story the other day my survival instincts kicked in and, come on, let's go, down to the netball courts, and she chickened out. And then I don't know what I did with detention and how I ended up in detention, but I ended up in detention and met one of the, top dogs of the school, and we became not friends in the playground, but people knew that we were, friends. And then all of a sudden it was okay, weird. Even though Dad had briefed you on a sexual assault, obviously there was a massive gap in the events that happened on that particular night.
Yes.
So I distinctly remember, and whether it's just made up in my head or not, but I remember, and I don't even know how long it was, where it was a phone call and you were briefed that it wasn't just one event on that night. It was actually other events on that night because a forensic examination had come back and there were all these specimens that determined that there was some sort of pack rape that had also happened. Mm. What was the time frame of that?
Oh, I couldn't tell you.
Was it like a week or months or...?
No, it would probably be within
within
a month. Mm. Yeah. And...
Paddy was very evasive too.
Yeah, sort of. So was Louise.
Mm.
It was, they virtually knocked the socks off me. They're saying to me, a suspected rape. And then you get that information that says, no, it was a very traumatic thing. But I never really found out all that went on until we were in the courtroom.
So did you get that information from Mum and Dad, or did you get that information from...
Be a social worker or police. I think it was the police because they were the ones that kept ringing my boss and telling me what I had to do and what I didn't have to do. Yeah, and that's why I gave him a notice, because I thought you came first, but my boss was great. He said, no.
Which is also, and I know we've talked about that quite a lot, but I think it's also, you know, how monumental that in itself. Here I am, someone that you hadn't met, turn up on your doorstep. I've got all these other issues and stuff going on, and yet you were willing to resign from your job to take care of me. That's just amazing.
You're a child and needed help, and our hearts just bled for you. That was it. I just could not understand Pat and Louise. And then we'd get little bits of information in little snippets. So there was no whole story and nothing to guide us what to do. All I could do, or we could do, was treat you like we did Robert and Cathy. Wasn't it? And that's all we could do.
You must have been a bit of an embarrassment to them, and they just wanted you away. Which I thought, God, that's not right.
They weren't nurturing. They weren't nurturing parents, that's for sure. And they had so many kids.
They were tunnel vision with their religion, that was it. Whoever was near you had to follow on or get left behind.
Which also is really interesting when, and obviously I've had lots of reflections over many, many years, and I've seen other situations with other kids in similar things with the Jehovah's Witnesses, where it's almost like, well, you have no choice, born into the Jehovah's Witnesses, but you don't have a choice to kind of leave. And if you do choose to leave, then you're ostracised, you know, from the family and everybody else in the religion. And because I've seen it with other children, it's like the children then become someone else's problem.
Yes.
Which is, you know, as a parent, I find that really difficult to believe. But again, why I'm so fortunate that I had
the boys.
Beautiful people. Well, I had the boys, but at that time of my life, I had other people that were willing, like you both, to support me through.
You had the guts to get away from it.
But I really admire you for, I know you've come through a rough run, but I really admire for the way that you have turned your life around, because when you got sent back to Northern Territory, I was no help to you then. I was a wreck. So you still could move on from there. I know you made mistakes.
Yeah, in different phases of my life.
But we all do.
Yeah.
And you finish up with two beautiful boys and you've turned your life around.
Yeah. Yeah. Determination.
Yeah, but not everyone's got that. It's easier to go down the downward track, much easier.
Yeah.
And see, we weren't social workers or trained in any way. I mean, I was always team manager or treasurer of the kids' sporting things.
Yeah.
But that's not dealing with the problems you had.
No.
We were very green.
Yeah.
And but you responded to us, so that was good.
Yeah, trauma's it's an interesting thing, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So you became then aware of, you know, these other events that happened on that particular evening. So then you were then introduced to a whole bunch of doctors and psychologists and detectives and lawyers and police and and so you had, how was that?
Well, that's when I handed in my notice, because they were ringing my boss's phone at work. Well, it wasn't just the Medicare number. They somehow got his number at work. And, you know, he put his head up and he's like, Norma, wind on the phone. So I never knew whether it was the police or a social worker or was a doctor.
Wow.
And I thought, well, I can't do both. You were the priority.
Yeah.
So that's why I handed him the resignation. But he wouldn't take it. But it was good because everyone at work knew that they didn't know what the problem was, but knew there was family worries, and they would all fill in for me, because at the drop of a hat I'd say, I'm off. You know? So I was very lucky too, because I had their support.
Which is just incredible.
It is, I couldn't imagine any other manager doing
so. Which is also like, you know, when I talk about Raised by an Invisible Village, and I talk in one of the episodes as well that there's all these other people that form that I have no awareness
which is the
extension
connection.
Of what you were saying, that you have this amazing support network within your work.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're like extended family, weren't they? They were, that was a unique group of people that I worked with.
Special.
Yeah.
And if I could say thank you to them right now, I would say thank you.
Yes, yeah.
For what they did for you to help me.
Well, those that I'm still in contact with are very excited to have come out the other end.
Yeah, she turned out okay.
Yes. She's still little Cassie up there.
So, I mean, apart from dealing with all of that, we're now on a plane to Darwin.
Mm. Dear, that I just got told that I was going to Darwin with you. I can't even remember. It would have been the police. And they said that they'd booked this flight and we were going to Darwin to the court case. It wasn't, will you come? Are you prepared? So I just said to my boss, I'm off to Darwin. I don't know for how long. They told me that there were police, plainclothes police on the plane with us. And I thought, well, what for? I'm not going to run away. But anyhow, and then when we got to Darwin, the police were there to meet us, and they were in plainclothes too, which was good.
This is just beyond my memory.
Yeah. And they took us to a hotel in Darwin. Then we got on the plane to Tree Hop on the way to Alice Springs.
Catherine.
And then the, I don't know, it was one of the solicitors that was on the plane. Mm. He's saying, oh, I hate those flights. And I'm thinking, you hate them.
Yeah, because we've only been like a little 8-seater or 10-seater. Mm-hmm. I remember.
They didn't have a co-pilot. And we got the message that your parents were going to be at the airport. And would I handle it. They didn't ask how you would handle it.
Yeah,
and
wow.
I said, well, Kathy's parents have got to accept it. Mm. But when we got off the plane, you let them know you didn't want them there.
Yeah.
So they left. And then we got taken to the motel, which was only across the laneway away from the courthouse. And we were, I never felt frightened. I didn't think I needed to feel frightened, but I certainly didn't feel frightened because we had someone there with us all the time.
Yeah.
The true story of what happened that night I heard when I was in the witness box with you.
Yeah.
And that just devastated me.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, so.
it was very, I mean, a few things. Obviously, we weren't in there for, I was a witness.
Yes.
For my own case. So I didn't hear any of the other conversations that happened. But a couple of things that stood out for me was we were told that I wouldn't be cross-examined. I don't know if you remember that.
Yes.
And then I was cross-examined.
That's right.
Mm.
Yeah. And because my memory, I only remembered one of those incidences on the night. There was this huge gap. I didn't remember a lot of what had happened. So then it was, you know, had I made this up and made to feel like, yeah, I did something wrong and which obviously I was 13-year-old and shouldn't have been out of the streets, but, you know.
It was a whole situation.
Yeah, it was a whole situation that kind of led up to that. My gratefulness that I do remember being incredibly scared and the fact that you came into the witness box.
Yeah, we were holding hands.
I know. It's, you know, even now it makes me kind of my heart beat and feel breathless because It was very monumental.
It was a very big thing. And I felt that they were, well, the policeman said they wanted to get the boys. Mm. And see, then I heard about the and I was led to believe that he got off. And I was really, he shouldn't have. He was a grown man and I really went off. But then you've told me since he did go to jail.
Yeah.
So that makes me feel better because, all right, these were boys and they were naughty and they definitely did the wrong thing.
Mm.
But this fella, an adult, yeah, shouldn't have got off. So. But the police were very good to us.
Yeah.
And you wanted to go straight home. Mm. So they put us on a flight and the flight got detoured everywhere. We were in Sydney, we were in Queensland, we were back home.
That's crazy because I don't remember any of that trip home, not one iota.
Yeah. But we did eventually get home, affairs and everything.
Mm.
It was all taken. it was like we were bystanders, you know. We had, and even you going home back to Catherine.
Alice Springs.
See, I've told you I've got to mention. even you going back, I don't remember us booking your airfare.
Oh, really?
I really don't. It was probably welfare had probably done that.
Yeah, okay.
So that's strange that I remember everything else, but I can't.
I was going to say that also would have been a traumatic time for you having to make that decision to send me back.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
So, I was just thinking the other day, I do not remember. And I used to do all the booking, all I could do for us. But I don't remember that. But it would have been.
Probably.
Yeah.
Because your doctor and the welfare lady, who I thought was useless, though she was happy long as we were all happy, but once things got a bit trying, she was as helpful as that chocolate biscuit. But the doctor was very good, wasn't she? The doctor was good.
I didn't have that input.
She was very good. And I think
was it a doctor or a psychologist? I remember going to a psychologist in Melbourne.
That's what I'm thinking. It was a welfare worker. She was a psychologist.
Oh, okay.
But the doctor that they, who must have worked for the government, because they'd made arrangements with her for us to go, where I would have taken you to our family doctor. But she was very good. But I was at the stage then that she said, she's got to go home.
That was
horrible.
Yeah, it would have been an incredibly difficult decision to make. But it was the right decision to make.
Because I couldn't cope. I couldn't stop crying, so I had to have
it. Oh, but just when you put it into perspective, here I am, you both, someone that you hadn't met, had all these different issues, all this trauma, going in a plane, sitting in front of all of those people in court, which also, when I look back, I go, why didn't they separate them? Like, why didn't...
Paddy and Louise weren't allowed in court.
Yeah, I remember asking them. In court. And I do think back and I go, where did it come from where I was brave enough to say to a judge, can my parents be removed?
And I want Auntie Norma.
You know, I want Auntie Norma to hold my hand.
Yeah, that was incredible, man.
Yeah, do think about that. But somewhere, obviously, I was given the comfort and safety to be able to confidently be able to do that as well.
Because you definitely didn't want anything to do with your parents, which is understandable.
Yeah. I also have this moments where I think, because Mum and Dad loved me.
Yes.
I
just didn't want the responsibility.
Well, sometimes I do think, how did they feel through that? Like it's,
I don't know.
I know it's hard again because I, being parents,
and like,
it's hard to
like your other foster mother. I wrote Louise a lot of letters, saying, does she realise what she's missing out on? You know, the love and the laughter and the fun of having a young daughter, and she never answered those letters. But after I sent you home, she sent me flowers.
Yeah.
And those flowers, I think, went in the rubbish
bin. Yeah.
Because I thought, that means nothing to me. You know, it was...
Incredible. So incredible. So during my time that I was with you, did Mum and Dad ring you guys? Like, what was there any communication ongoing?
There wasn't really, was it? No.
Can't remember
any. No, there wasn't any. Only that I would write to them now and then.
Yeah.
And because it would be wild.
Yeah.
And I'd write to them and say that they're missing out on their beautiful daughter.
Their responsibility then.
It's just
unbelievable to me. Strange. Yeah. And that's why,
it's so strange.
You know, our hearts just went out to you. But I do think, you know, the powers that be should have sat down with us and explained the road we should take, because we didn't know.
Yeah.
You know, we can only treat you how we did the others.
But there were so many other complexities in, you know, the story of mine right at that point in time that would have been difficult for anyone to really manage.
No. Well, I did go, but Paddy wrote us a letter to say that the alleged rape happened. And I took that, this is before you arrived, a couple of days before, and I took that letter to my GP and I said, I don't know how I'm going to handle this. I said, but she will be going to you because you're my GP.
Yeah.
And he said to me, go across the road to the police station. So I went across the road to the police station and the policeman looked, read the letter and he said, get a solicitor. I said, what would I need a solicitor for? This is a child, you know, coming out. And I said, get a solicitor. And he said, and you ring the Northern Territory. He said, because we can ring and they won't tell us anything about the case. You ring and they'll give you more information. So that sort of shocked me. And I said, how come they're sending Kathy to us? You know, we've got no communication. Mm. They said, your husband's ex-Navy, government. You work for Medicare? Government. You're a 21-year-old and an 18-year-old. Neither of them been into trouble with the police. They don't know what colour underwear you wear. So we were
so that open would have books. Been, that would have
we
been
would
a
have
bit,
been investigated, yeah.
That would have been a bit impactful as well, so that...
Yeah, they sort of knew all about it. Yeah. I worked for the Border Works. That's another government
job, yeah. So we were all government. We reared our kids in Frankston and there was no... Except it was Robert when he knocked down their post in the car. But there was no, you know, criminal activity. Our kids, he even knew. He said, you've been involved with the kids with all their sports and their ballet. So I thought, they really, Big Brother does really know if we scratch our nose.
Way before, you know, technology and
that's
social
right.
and
yeah.
stuff.
So that's, that I think is incredible. Yeah. But, anyhow, we might have been the right people. I'm not sure.
Oh, you totally were. Because what if you hadn't taken me in? What if you took me in for a couple of weeks and sent me back? What if you didn't come with me to court? Like, what if you hadn't put me into school? Like, there's a lot of what ifs.
And yet, we all clicked.
Yeah, which was just incredible. Incredible. Yeah, so fortunate. And in some ways, my parents were really fortunate that they were able to call someone to take me in as well.
I think they asked Annie Ellen first.
Yeah, right.
And she said no. Yeah. So, and that's how, you know, we were second choice. But, it was just so good that we got along.
Yeah. Amazing. Mm. Amazing. Part of, I guess, again, going back to Raised by an Invisible Village, in, you know, I guess a lot of the research that I've done in how you can move from dysfunctionality not being permanent, and I guess my life was so dysfunctional back then, and my life was dysfunctional for many years after. But in terms of being able to move through and your life becoming functional, there's three key things: acceptance, belief, and protection. And when I look back to those key people that were in my life, and you both were in a very critical part of my life where there was significant trauma that had occurred and was happening, those three things were really evident.
Oh, the old mother had come out. And he just backed me up, whatever I said had to happen, you know, to school and, you know, like the parent-teacher went.
Yeah.
The interview I went to and the Italian teacher said to me, I want to speak to you. And I thought, I don't care about Italian. Yeah. Maths, English and science.
Yeah.
she said to me, I just want you to know I've been brought up in two different, you know, Australian and Italian families. And I don't know what the full story of Kathy is, but it's obvious, you know, it's a different family to you.
Yeah.
So whatever happens, just remember I understand. And it can always come to me because it will be true. And I thought, silly old bag, you know, I didn't. But then later on I thought, oh, she could see that it'd have to come somewhere to a point.
There was a lot of clashing of worlds, you know, having been a child of a Jehovah's Witness family, I guess then 6 months of absolute chaos and running away to then trauma to then being
stability.
Then stability.
A funny family.
It's like not a funny family, amazing family, but it It would have been interesting to, like, observe my behaviour as, you know, to be honest, like a case study, really.
It's all good.
I mean, this is probably a challenging question, but I think it's an important question to ask. So in the end, what were the events that led up to you having to send me back to my parents?
How about, sorry, darling. Right. With the day after we arrived home from the court case, which absolutely shattered me, you were going on camp with the school. So I said to the form teacher, please look after Kathy. She's gone through a traumatic thing. Make sure the boys don't hassle her in any way, mate, you know, because you're an attractive girl, you're high school. So I was really terribly worried. The next day we get a letter from Auntie Ellen telling us that you had written her a letter and that you had been having sex with this Bruce and you were worried that you were pregnant. So, and Ellen keeps a copy of every letter she writes to even to Sandra. So she wrote a letter to us and the same letter to you that, you know, you've got to tell Auntie Norma and Uncle Dan and you've got to be honest and this, that and the other. And I was still crying tears of blood over the court case and worried about you and then this. So I rang your doctor from welfare and she said, come in, show me the letter, and we showed it to her. And she said, right. She said, you know, I said, look, she's always, you know, I said, no sex, no drink, no lies. And I said, she's broken to all the rules. Anyhow, she said, right. She said, give Kathy the letter when she comes home from camp. All sit in the lounge room together and just say, look, there's a letter from Auntie Ellen. We open it up and read it. How's she going? And then you go judged by her reaction. So I couldn't pick you up because I was still crying at the time. It was terrible. So I got your girlfriend's mother to pick you up and I said to her that I've got a bad asthma attack. I can't go. So that was a lie, but good one. And then you sat on the arm of my lounge chair and you read the letter and you had no reaction, no flicker of guilt or just no reaction, was there? So we all thought we were all very tired and we went to bed. And the next morning I get woken up with my Kathy yelling at you, saying to you, you're killing my mother. You've got something to tell my mother. You be honest with my mother. So I hid in the ensuite for a while till things quietened down. And then when I came into the kitchen, you had gone. But you hadn't taken the horse. So we knew that you hadn't gone far. I think I looked for your key card and you had that. And I thought, well, I don't think there's much money in that account anyway.
Yeah.
So then we spread out. So Kathy goes one way, Dan went the other way. And anyhow, I found you at your girlfriend's place, still in our street. And you're on the phone then to, I think, your form teacher. So you gave me the phone and the form teacher said to me, oh, surely, Mrs. Murphy, it's not as bad as what Kathy thinks. And I said, it's worse. Because it had just, all the love I'd put into you, I thought,
it meant nothing. In one moment it meant nothing. Diminished, yeah.
Because I had, We had sex talks in the car that I never ever had with Robin and Kathy. So I was more honest with you than them.
Yeah.
Anyhow, so we had an appointment to see the doctor, didn't we? You came.
Yeah,
we went to the doctor. Because, I was a bit of a mess because I'd go out in the I'd be in the house and I'd be crying and then I'd settle myself down and come back into the house and then start again. So anyhow, we saw the doctor and she got stuck into you. You know, your Auntie Norma and Uncle Dan, they've moved heaven and earth for you and look what you've done. You are crying like mad. So she went outside to get some more tissues and you stopped crying. You said, can I go to the shower?
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I said, no. And I think that's when I grounded you.
Wow.
And I said, no, you're grand. And you said, for how long? And I said, till you're 30.
Yeah.
So that, but then the doctor said, no, she's got to go back. You can't, you know, I was a wreck.
Yeah.
But I loved you and I felt, I don't know. So a lot of people judged me, your Auntie Ellen as well, my sister June did. How can you send a child back? But they were not living in that situation.
I was going to say, they hadn't lived through all of that. Mm. So,
and I think it was just that I trusted you so much. Mm. Yeah, I trusted you so much and loved you so much. And so emotional after that court case for it all to happen. Boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
And my, I couldn't cope. Mm. Yeah, so sorry, love.
Oh, no, don't be sorry. I'm emotional because I don't remember. And we had this conversation the other day about some of those things that I had no recollection around at all.
Yeah, I was surprised you didn't remember us going back to the motel and you were sobbing and I'm hanging on to you and you're sobbing and sobbing and sobbing. Yeah. And all of a sudden I stopped crying and it was me that was sobbing, not you. So that's and gives you an idea of the emotion I went through with that court case.
Absolutely.
And Patty and Louise, I think I would have put a knife through.
Yeah.
You know, I was so just disgusted.
Oh, I'm so sorry that
I did all those. No, you were a little girl. Well, you educated me.
Yeah, but to the finale of why you needed to make that decision, which was the absolute right decision, I was this troubled little girl that still had the next phases of her life to kind of get through. But
they put you in with that other couple that were social workers or
house parents. Yeah.
And that's what you really should have had probably instead of us because they would know the mood swings or how to handle it or something.
We realise just what religion can do. There's good religion and bad religion and it can screw people up completely.
That's right.
Yeah.
Mm. And it's been documented for years.
Yeah. And the other interesting thing is like the whole Jehovah's Witness thing, people don't talk about it because when you're raised, if you start to talk ill about it, you then become what's called an apostate. But people actually don't talk about it, which is also, I guess, part of what I want to tell is the story of what it was like to be raised because it's a different world. And unfortunately, that world led to all of those traumatic things that happened to me, but other people were impacted by that too, which is not fair.
But it's life.
But it is life, and you can't go back and, you know, what's happened's happened.
But we are so proud of what you've come through and turned out. You know, it's just good. And you've read two beautiful boys and protected them. And so all your experiences the boys have benefited from because you've made sure that they've got the right comfort and backstops.
Yeah. But again, there's been, you know, what if I had been put into a halfway house or a welfare home and not your home for that period of my time? Because, do you know what I mean? Like, if I hadn't had the deep love that you shared with me and unconditionalness of, you know, especially going to court and the unconditional of jumping into a witness box, any other person potentially wouldn't have done that. Do you know what I mean?
I can't imagine I'm not doing
that. Yeah, but that's a character of you and you both because you had that instant feeling for me.
Protection
and acceptance because of the family bond. If it had been someone else that hadn't had that, then I potentially wouldn't have necessarily have experienced
I suppose experiencing our family before
correct. It
went wrong and then going to this family that knew how to handle situations, it was probably a good
start. Well, that obviously meant, you know, Sheila and I were exposed to a lot more seriously traumatised children than what I was. Wow. And so after I went back to my parents, was there any closure for my parents back to you both? Like
floral arrangement.
Just the floral arrangement. That was
it. Bend, yes.
I think we heard from Ellen that she'd gone over there then, WA.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was years later.
Yeah, yeah, well, we thought it was virtually straight up.
Yeah.
Mm. But so we only heard little scrappings, bits and pieces, but I wasn't looking for anything either. I had
you had
I
you,
closed the book.
You yeah. needed to recover from your own trauma of that 6 months.
Yeah. So that when your father died, I thought, I don't know how I'm going to handle this.
Yeah, really.
And you must have felt that way too, because that's the first time we'd seen us.
It is.
And we just played it by ear.
Yeah.
And here we are. So the love, the connection was there right from the start. But, you know, you had to go your rocky road and I had to heal.
Wow. And even that, it's like, I'm grateful that out of something sad that, you know, obviously Dad dying, that we're able to reconnect.
Because how would we?
And in my own way, be like, I'm really sad that you had to deal with 30-odd years of sadness.
Yeah, but it's...
And I hope...
I can talk about it now. To start with, I couldn't talk about it at all. And actually, when my boss, God love him, after you had gone home, he called me into the office one day and he said, there's my keys to my holiday house. I said, what for? He was very nice. He said, you look like you've aged 100 years. You and Dan go down to the holiday house.
Oh, really?
And you think,
wow.
I was so touched by that, that he would do that, like, to his part-timer.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I wasn't assistant manager or anything like that. But, yeah, Stan's a... He's special, isn't he?
Well, thank you, Stan.
Yeah. Well,
thank you, Stan.
No, he's good.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, isn't that great? You know, the little Kathy. Yes, the little Kathy.
Yeah, isn't that just beautiful?
Yeah,
again, the extension of people that were there.
Yeah. People that are friends are genuine. That's it.
Grateful.
Yeah. But we're grateful that, not that Patty died, but we're grateful that... We've reconnected because at least I can see. Doesn't matter. Someone's saying she's doing well.
Yeah,
you don't really know, but to be able to see in person.
It was a short period of time, but the impact was huge. Not only for me, obviously, but for you guys.
I hope that helps your story.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you for being you.
And I definitely just have. It's almost like thank you is not even. It's too small a word to actually express how incredibly grateful. That I am, that you both were in my life at such a traumatic period of my life. And
but we're glad in hindsight, we're very glad that we are. We were, aren't we?
When we went to the funeral, we thought we didn't really know how you would react to us because we sort of felt a bit guilty because we sent you back. Hindsight, we probably shouldn't have.
I couldn't have coped. That was a breaking point, but wouldn't have.
And I guess I generally want to say yes, that would have been incredibly difficult for you to make that decision for many, many reasons.
Mm.
The guilt component, it was the right decision to make.
Mm.
And I don't ever remember feeling bitter and twisted. I just want to say thank you very much for having the opportunity to have a conversation. It is actually a really emotional part of my life, and I know it was a really emotional part for both of your lives, but also for Catherine of it.
I am sure that this episode may have stirred some discomfort for you as a listener. In the lead up to our conversation, there were moments of extreme uneasiness, not only for me, but also for my aunt and uncle. However, what I can say though, is that having those uncomfortable and challenging conversations, especially when there is mutual acceptance, belief, and love, enables the painful moments of the past to gradually fade away, allowing a fresh start to our relationship. The conversations and moments of the past no longer need to be visited. I genuinely hope that you appreciated the opportunity to observe our conversation. I take great pride in having the confidence and courage to introduce these remarkable individuals to you, allowing my story to unfold in an authentic and genuine way. I invite and welcome you into the next episode of my story, Raised by an Invisible Village, creating a safe and connected space for you and I. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the series Raised by an Invisible Village, And these real life stories have provided you with the opportunity to reflect about your own invisible village. A moment in time to uncover those who accept you, support your growth, and celebrate your success. And the recognition that you also are a character in someone else's invisible village, and how important our roles are as mentors, influencers, and champions. I'd love to stay connected and encourage you and others to join me by subscribing to my podcast channels. Together, we can continue to recognize the power of our invisible village for acceptance, growth, and success.